Well, Murph, we're back for our second episode of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. It's good to have you back in the co-pilot seat, and I'm looking forward to previewing the season, talking about whether the Boston Bruins are going to be a playoff-worthy team or not, which I think is going to be a hotly contested thing to start the season, and also talking to our guy hockey agent, Jerry Buckley, who's got is locally based in Rhode Island and has a lot of big-name clients in the NHL.
Yeah, it's going to be great, and you know, definitely the season's upon us here, and we're almost done with camp. I can't, it just flew by, and you're right. We're going to look, maybe make some predictions later in the show, and you talk about whether the Bruins will make a run to the playoffs. As far as I know, you and I are concerned, we don't know if that's so hotly contested, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we won't give it all our secrets away now, but one other thing we will have is the BAQ, which stands for Bruins Answer Questions, and I'll ask a bunch of the Bruins what the best thing they did in this super long summer after not making the playoffs was. So stay tuned for that as well. Let's start the show. All right, Murph, let's get into the teeth of the podcast here, get down to the nitty-gritty, and let's do some predictions and previews. First of all, and most importantly, what do you think of the Bruins' chances? How do you think they're going to fare in the league this year? Do you think that they're going to make the playoffs?
No, I do not think they'll make the playoffs. I do think they have a very, very good chance of being one of those bubble teams. I think there's going to be a lot of those bubble teams in the Eastern Conference, Joe. I think, really, when it comes down to it towards the end of the season, in terms of the final placement of the playoffs, I got a feeling we're going to see such a jumbled up picture there. It's just, it's going to be from 6 to like 10, or even 6 to 12, are going to be right there within points of each other. But I think the Bruins end up at the end falling out of that playoff race and just missing again.
Yeah, no doubt. I think they're going to vie all year for the 7th or 8th spot. They'll be right around that bubble. I'm sure at some points they'll be in that picture, and at other points they'll be out of that picture. There's also, you know, the doomsday scenario where with these injuries to Chara and Seidenberg and, you know, so many new players and all of that stuff, that
they're out of it.
They really fall out of it quickly in the first couple of months. And that's also definitely a possibility. If that does not happen, I see them just hanging around that 7th or 8th spot in the cluster that you're talking about. You know, some people are really optimistic, and they think that the Bruins will be, you know, the 4th or 5th best team. They're going to go back to what they used to be. Look, the Montreal Canadiens are better than the Bruins. The Tampa Bay Lightning, better than the Bruins. The Pittsburgh Penguins, better than the Bruins. New York Islanders, better than the Bruins. New York Rangers, better than the Bruins. Washington Capitals, better than the Bruins. You can name
Columbus Blue Jackets this year will be better than the Bruins.
If they're healthy, no doubt. But I would put at least 6 teams ahead of them in the East, no questions asked, that those teams are more talented than the Bruins.
And everybody sort of.
They're in that neighborhood with Ottawa, with Florida, with Toronto,
Buffalo,
with Columbus.
Even Buffalo.
Well, no, and that's the other point, is that the bad teams are getting a lot better. So I think the Bruins got worse this year and a lot of other teams got better, and that does not bode well for their playoff chances.
No, I think, and that's the biggest thing right there, is that so many teams have improved drastically, I think. And, you know, we bring up the Blue Jackets there. If they don't have the rash of injuries they had last year, they're competing for the top spot in the conference. That's how good this team will be if they have the chemistry going and they're healthy. I'm telling you, we'll get to that later, but I really see a lot for them. But here's a question I ask you, Joe, and obviously, you know, we saw this last year where some of the media, you know, kind of wondered, were the Buffalo Sabres tanking it to get the number one pick, to get Eichel or McDavid? I don't think they were, but here's my question to you. No, I don't think they were tanking it. I think it's impossible to tank it in today's world. I really do, in today's sports world.
If you get a collection of really bad goaltenders and you trade away a lot of your established players during the season, I would say that's a pretty good plan.
Do you know how much parity there is? You still can maybe make the playoffs. That's the parity of the Eastern Conference.
Well, the thing is, though, even if Buffalo did tank, which I am of the opinion I think that they did, they still didn't get the number one pick.
No.
You know, they still didn't get Connor McDavid.
But back to the Bruins.
And Tim Murray was all disappointed about getting Jack Eichel
at
first,
you mentioned,
which is
happens,
ridiculous.
If what you mentioned happens, Joe, and they fall out of it by November, and they're at the bottom of the league, are they better off not doing anything and just sort of letting it ride out instead of trying to get in the middle of the pack again and getting Matthews with the number one pick? And that's the dilemma that they're going to find. And that's the dilemma.
You think the Bruins are in the dilemma of maybe going for the number one pick next year?
I do.
No way.
I think they could be.
Murph, no way.
I think they could be.
No way. Not
Joe, if they're at the bottom of the league in December.
Murph, they have Tuukka Rask, Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci.
Okay.
You know, they still have good young players in David Pastrnak and Ryan Spooner.
So what
they
if something happened to Tuukka Rask?
Well, look, if the whole team was in a train accident and got hurt and couldn't play, then yeah, of course, they would be in there for the number one pick. But let's judge it on its face with the roster right now and look at the team. I don't think there's any way that this team
could
is
be
anywhere
that bad?
Close to as bad as Edmonton was last year with all those young players and just a complete mess as far as defense and goaltending goes, or with Buffalo, who was just an atrocious team where they purposely, I think, made themselves
bad. I don't think they're that bad either.
But what I'm trying to say is how do you avoid being in that mediocre level for years to come? Well, this is the problem. I think they are in that level.
And they're going to be stuck there for a bit.
Well, and they've got Rask signed to a long-term deal. They've got Bergeron signed to a long-term deal. They've got Krejci signed to a long-term deal. They're locked in with those players that are good enough to bring them from that, you know, worst team in the league. So as far as I'm concerned, they are middle fiddle for the future. But this is sort of getting away from you know, this season.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, here we are, right? We're sitting here recording this in TD Garden, and it's the 20th anniversary of this building.
Yeah.
They're right back where they were when this building went up. As far as I'm concerned,
I don't think they're right back there.
They're just middle of the pack.
They're middle of the pack.
And that's where they're going to stay this year and years going forward.
But they're on the natural downslide of having won the Cup and had a nucleus that had a good run for 10 years. That team 20 years ago was not really, you know, that team was You know, that team was just sort of there and was in that stretch of years where they, you know, they would make the playoffs. They're okay. The fans didn't really associate with the team. They didn't like a lot of the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Joe Thornton era, I think there was a real disconnect between the fans and the players and the way that they were playing. There wasn't a lot of heart to those teams. And, you know, that was prevalent last year.
Last year's team.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But I think this is more the natural cycle of they're going down from being, like, up in the peak for a while, where it's a little different in that regard. But, it's nice and it's sexy to talk about Austin Matthews and to say they're going to get the number one pick.
I'm not saying they will. I'm saying if they were in a position to, should they?
I just don't think they are. I mean, they would have to – if they wanted to blow up the team, if Don Sweeney wanted to completely just take TNT and sticks of dynamite and destroy his team, he would have done it this summer. He didn't do that. He made tweaks. I think they understand and they want – there to be playoffs because they want the gate from the playoffs. I think they want to be able to answer that expectation from the fans that they want postseason hockey. Like, there's a delicate balance going on here where the city of Boston, you won't know it, I know it, doesn't put up with teams that aren't good.
Yeah.
You immediately go from relevancy to oblivion if you're not a playoff team and if you're not willing to compete. And I don't think they want to go there. And I think they run a serious risk if they get that bad. And I just don't see it with these players.
We'll see.
Yeah. As far as this
year
goes,
what do we think of this year, though? Let's make some predictions in terms of individuals and
why don't we start with the Bruins?
I'm talking about the Bruins.
Give me your best, your biggest surprise that you think is going to happen on this team, player wise.
On this team, player wise, I'm going to say Adam McQuaid.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
I think Adam McQuaid has a healthy year. Comes in, finally finds his niche. Problem is, that niche might not match his contract, and he'll have that on his back all the time from the media and the fans. But at the same time, I finally think we get what we've always wanted or what we knew Adam McQuaid could give. And I think that's just a steady physical game on the blue line and a guy that's going to be intimidating to forwards coming into the offensive zone. And I think he can help in terms of leadership in the locker room. I think we finally get the Adam McQuaid we were looking for. Again, maybe not the Adam McQuaid that his contract says he should be, but the Adam McQuaid that you and I know he can be.
Yeah, and he told me that he had a minor surgery this summer that was related to his blood clot issues that he had, which a lot of people that have that issue have the surgery. And he said that allowed him finally having that surgery to work out like he used to in the off season. You could see it when he first showed up.
Mentally, he seems great,
upper
too.
Upper body, he was huge. I think he's feeling good and strong.
Yep.
I think he's definitely poised to be in a place where he's going to have his best season. Now, does that mean he's a top four defenseman? I don't know.
No, exactly.
I think we'll see on that. At my end, the guy that I think, I am so high on Colin Miller. Young defenseman
like that
they got in the Milan Lucic trade. I think he's been one of their best defensemen out there on the ice in preseason. I think he is way above Zach Trotman and Joe Morrow talent-wise. When you watch him skate, when you watch him shoot, when you watch the way mobility-wise he can break the puck out of the zone, when you see that first pass while he's moving and evading guys and he goes tape to tape with the first pass out of the zone, that is exactly the kind of guy that they need and they have to have. I think it would be a crime if he's not on this team to start the year. I think he's definitely one of their best six defensemen, and I think he's poised to maybe be one of those guys that we're going to be talking Calder Trophy about at the end of the season, because they need a guy. They want a guy like that on their wall, Murph. They need a guy like that on their wall.
You know what's interesting? I heard somebody talking about, who was the guy they mentioned yesterday in Edmonton? I was listening to some radio, and they talked about Darnell Nurse.
Yep.
And how, you know, why isn't he making, Edmonton sent him down this past week. Why isn't he on a they're defensemen. You need to season defensemen. You need to let them get that experience at the minor league level. You look at Colin Miller, and that's what I see. I see a guy who got great experience in a great organization with the Kings in Manchester there, and it's paying off right now, and it's coming to fruition. I'm with you. I really think that guy's poised for a big year, too. I think a wild card guy, though, Joe, that could have a really good year and surprise us, or could finally just tail off and people give up on him. Brett Conley's an interesting guy to look at. A number six pick overall, you know, like, is he ever going to reach a potential?
Is he your decline player? Is he the guy that you think might
He's already declined. I don't think there's anywhere but up for him. My decline player actually would be, unfortunately, Bruins fans aren't going to like this because he was probably their biggest signing of the year, but it's going to be Bolesky. I see Bolesky leveling off. I think this guy has some health issues that people haven't talked about. You look at the number of games he's played.
Well, the size that he is and the intensity that he plays at, you can't stay healthy. It's very
I think people are going to be looking too much for him to be a Lucic or pot those, you know, be that size and those goals on the wing there. I don't see him having a big year.
I think it's Zdeno Chara. You know, it's difficult to say that because the Bruins really need him to be strong and to be healthy and to have a big year for them at 38 years old.
He's also human.
They're putting a lot of eggs in the basket that he's going to be able to stay in one piece for this year. But he's 38 years old, Murph. He's going to turn 39 this season. He's logged a lot of miles in his 17-year career. And when you see him not even last, you know, three shifts in his first preseason game and he's already down with an injury, I think that gives you an idea of what this season is going to be like. You know, maybe there are going to be stretches where he's healthy and where he can play 20 minutes a night and give you what you need.
Yeah.
But you're going to start to see him get hurt more, and he's going to miss more time. And it's just Father Time calling and telling him, you know, that his, the end of his career is coming soon in the next couple of years. And he's going to go from that invincible Terminator that he used to be when he was just, you know, the scariest guy in the defensive zone to a mere mortal now that is a 38-year-old man that's just trying to stay healthy in a violent league. And, you know, the Bruins are going to have hard times this year because I think Seidenberg and Chara are both going to have a hard time staying healthy.
That's why they're going to need us to be right on Miller and McQuaid.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's talk about some happy things here with the Bruins. Most goals and most points. Who do you have?
Most goals, I'm going to go with Pastrnak. I think he continues to rise. I'm looking at 28 goals for the young man.
Yep.
That's what I like there.
28
goals, yep.
You know what? Playing with David Krejci, I think he's going to be possible to score that much. I think he's going to get plenty of chances.
And points, I'll go with Krejci.
And it is a young man's game in the NHL. You know, he's the perfect time, the perfect age, the perfect skill set to be able to go in. I definitely think he's going to score 20-plus goals and, you know, 50 to 60 points for Pastrnak. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm like you. I'm bullish on Krejci. I think
if he's healthy,
he's highly motivated to be healthy and to have a full year. And, you know, with Pastrnak and Bolesky, I think he's got enough talent around him to do well. And also the power plays, I think, are going to be decent for the Bruins, given some of the offensive players that they have. So I definitely like Pastrnak, but I don't think he's going to upset Marchand as the team's leading goal scorer. I think Marshy's been right there at the top the last few years. I think he's once again going to lead the Bruins in goals scored.
Hit the big 3-0, you think?
You know, he might get close to 30, certainly coming off that elbow surgery and feeling completely healthy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he's a guy that I think takes a lot more ownership in this team now, takes a lot more pride in being along with Bergeron, one of the guys that's kind of driving the bus. And I think he's going to take it on his own responsibility to even score more than he did in the past. And maybe he gets some power play time, Murph, this year where he hasn't in the last couple. So maybe we'll see more goals out of him. But I've got Marchand with maybe, you know, 27 goals, and then I'll give Krejci 65 points. As far as pulling back from the league perspective, let's go.
And one thing I want to say, Joe, too, another guy that would be a good wild card to watch is Louis Erickson, I think.
Yeah.
You know, here's a guy who, if you look at his time in Dallas, he was putting up some numbers. But then he came here and he just, well, in the last year in Dallas, he kind of faded off a bit, too. But then he came here and he just doesn't seem to fit. And now, you know, I saw a story you did on Marchand. You know, he's talking about chemistry and him and Bergeron and Erickson finding that chemistry. You know, maybe if they can keep that line together and they do find it there, maybe that that magic touch comes back for Louis Erickson. We'll see.
Or maybe he's the roster player that gets moved for a defenseman in trade because he's in the last year of his contract.
Probably the more likely one.
And he's coming off a pretty good year, and you know he's going to have value to a lot of teams out there if they did want to move him. So, but I think he is in line to have a decent year. He's just not the 30-goal, 70-point guy that he was in Dallas at his peak. Yeah. As far as league goes, your Stanley Cup predictions. Give me your two Stanley Cup final teams and your winner.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's buckle. Are you ready? Hold on, let me buckle myself in. Hold on. All right, I'm ready. All right.
So in the West, we will have the Anaheim Ducks.
All right, that's a reasonable
selection.
Finally, Getzlaff and Perry get to the big dance at the end again.
I like Bieksa coming in there. Yeah. I think Gibson is their starter by the end of the year.
Okay.
In the East, the team I referenced earlier, the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh.
The cannon will be sounding in June, Joe.
I hope not.
The cannon will be going off in June.
Wow, really?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So you think they're going to stay healthy, they're going to get all the way through in the first, like, basic shot in there.
Yep.
And go all the way to the end, kind of like Cinderella team-esque.
Yeah. Except I think they finished second in the East.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't get on board with the Columbus
And the Ducks Jackets. Win it all. That's my prediction.
Okay.
Ducks right. over the Blue Jackets.
I think...
not a TV matchup, for sure.
I think it's going to be the Kings in the West. I think Milan Lucic has 30-goal season, is up around 65, 70 points, beats the bejesus out of a bunch of tough guys in the Western Conference. And
gets
really,
$8 million a year the next year.
Yeah, and gets a huge contract from somebody, probably Vancouver, and goes home. I really think the Kings had their pride hurt last year, and those are some really good players that are experienced at winning, and I think a guy like Lucic is exactly what they needed and will help give them the kick in the pants along with last
Who
year
are they beating?
To get them back.
Who's coming out of the East?
And I have them beating the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they're going to get back there. I think Steve Stamkos is going to have a giant year with the contract stuff sort of hanging over his head. I think he's going to be able to perform really well with all that going on. And I like the Lightning to return there. They're super talented up front, and you know the D with Hedman obviously really good. I think they're the class of the East right now. And it's going to be a really entertaining final if those two teams are in there. But I'm going to go with L.A. And you know, since we're talking about Stamkos, we'll start the NHL awards predictions. Hart Trophy, I think Stamkos. I think Stamkos is going to have a gigantic year, as I said before. Hart Trophy for you, Murph.
Hart Trophy. I'm going to go with Ryan Getzlaff.
Okay.
Yep, I think it's Ryan Getzlaff.
It's about, I mean, it's his time, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's those guys' time to win those awards, to carry their team to the finals if they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Where they were sort of passengers on the last one, or younger players anyway.
Yeah.
You know? As far as Norris, let's go Norris first.
Okay, no Norris.
And I'm going the guy that should have won last year, Drew Doughty.
Okay.
I think he'll finally win his first Norris Trophy. I voted for him, number one.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a joke that Carlson won for the second time, given that he barely kills penalties and he's a liability in the defensive zone a lot.
See, my problem is, Joe, I agree with you, it is a complete joke, but I think that's the way that trophy's going, unfortunately, now. It's lost its meaning, you know. And, again, we have this discussion every year.
The
Orr
Trophy and the Norris.
Yeah, you got to do two, you know, break it up. But if they do it right, I'm going to say I think Doughty's a very valid pick. I would say Shea Weber.
Okay. Vezina.
Vezina Trophy. Well, you know what? I mean, look, I don't think Carey Price or many goalies, again, in our lifetime, can top the season he had last year. I mean, that was an astronomical year. So a lot of people are going to pick him, but I just think it's humanly impossible to repeat that, right? Even if he doesn't repeat it, he could still get it because it was that good. But I'm looking at Pekka Rinne in Nashville. I think Nashville's in for a big year, too. But I like Pekka Rinne to get the Vezina.
You're going to like this pick for Vezina. John Quick, UMass.
Ah, there we go, buddy.
I think
you are bullish on the Kings, huh?
With the resurging Kings, I think John Quick's going to have a big season. I like him out there. Calder.
Do you have beers with Dean Lombardi this offseason or something? Or what's going on?
I think that's a talented team.
Yeah, no,
you know,
there was no way they shouldn't have made the playoffs.
They had a lot of off-ice issues last year. There was a lot of stuff swirling around with that team. I think they were also exhausted from having played all those games
over in a three-year span,
4 or 5 years. Yeah. So I think last year was just their like kind of break, take a break and reevaluate and recharge. And I think they're going to be right back at it this year. Calder Trophy, God, I would go. I'm not a big Connor McDavid guy, so I would go Jack Eichel in Buffalo.
I'm going with Eichel, too.
Season.
I'm a big McDavid guy, but I think there's just too much hype on that kid right now. I think Eichel sneaks in there. You know, it's interesting. You look up in Canada right now. I mean, they've already anointed McDavid as the next Wayne Gretzky. You know, give the kid time. I think he could be, but I think Eichel slides in there. There's less pressure on him.
Yeah.
And you got to look at the teams, too. I think McDavid has a lot of talent around him, a lot of young guns around him there. But Eichel's got more veterans around him, more guys that can sort of keep him sheltered from all that hype and let him do his thing.
I also think he's more physically mature than McDavid is, and he's a little bigger and stronger, and he'll be able to withstand some of the pounding of the NHL season a little
better.
And
he's a mass kid, too.
A little better.
So there we go.
Well, he's the pride of Chelmsford. We kind of
exactly.
have to go for him. All right, I'm not even going to let you say Selke because we're both going to say Bergeron. So I think that's
I actually was going to say Taves.
Oh, screw you. It's Bergeron. All right, it's a foregone conclusion from the two of us. That's it for the preview for the NHL season and for the Boston Bruins. We're going to go to the BAQ, which stands for Bruins Answer Questions. We're going to ask a bunch of the Bruins, namely Tuukka Rask, Dennis Seidenberg, Louis Erickson, Matt Beleski, Adam McQuaid, what they did over the summer, what their most enjoyable thing that they did during the summer break was. And then when we come back, we'll have the interview with hockey agent Jerry Buckley. What's the most enjoyable thing you did this offseason, this summer, before coming back to Boston, whether it was you or with your family or whatever, the funnest thing you did this summer?
Yeah, I think just being with the family. I have three daughters, so it's always fun to have some time with them, and we did a lot of funny stuff this summer, so and I think we have had a really good time in Sweden this summer, so it was good.
You do, like, hiking and stuff or theme parks? Or, like, what do they like to do?
We used to have so many friends where we live, so almost every day we go out and play with all the other kids. Our friends have kids, and even my brothers and sister have families, too. And it's a nice feeling for them to get home and see all those the other friends they have in Sweden. So it's good time.
We went to Paris and London to see Wimbledon, so that was the highlight. And then I was just seeing the friends and family. That's always nice. Just it only happens once a year for us, so
that was good. Was Wimbledon something you've always wanted to do as a tennis fan?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's everybody who watches and likes tennis. That's the place to be, and it was definitely worth it.
Who's your favorite guy as far as tennis player now? Do you have one that you?
I've always liked Nadal, but I mean, I appreciate him all. Federer is always he's great to watch. Djokovic, a lot of good talent out there. It's all the guys in top 30, pretty much.
Have you ever played one of those guys or got in a situation?
No.
Would you?
No, I mean, I had some balls with them, but I mean, it wouldn't make no sense to play them.
Right. Most enjoyable thing. Yeah. We did lots, actually. We had the Perry's wedding was a blast. Get back with everyone. We had a few different events we went to. I like being at home. I like being at home, seeing my family, and getting that relaxing time.
Any highlights from Perry's wedding?
It was a pretty good time. Get back with all the guys from the season, guys you played with. Through the days that you get together for a wedding, we also had Bobby Ryan's wedding, which was good. A lot of guys I played in the minors with are there, so it was just it's always fun getting together with the guys.
I always say that when I get to go back home to PEI, it's so beautiful there in the summer, and I don't want to leave there when I'm there. So I usually don't travel too far, but we had a big family reunion at my parents' cottage this summer. I come from a big family, and everyone was able to make it. Just a day full of, it was a beautiful day and a day full of games and catching up and finished the night off with some fireworks and campfire and a sing-along, the whole nine yards. So that's something that sticks out to me.
It was actually all summer. We just spent time at the beach and just seeing the kids running around and enjoying their time. That's the most fun for me. And I get to relax and hang out with them, and that's all I need.
That Jersey Beach?
Jersey Shore, yeah. I mean, we didn't go anywhere. My wife likes to travel. I don't. So it's always a battle, but I enjoy it down there, and it's beach living, and it's relaxing.
Yeah, you travel all year.
That's what I mean. I'm in the plane so much. I don't need to be in the plane after the season ends, and that's where the battle starts.
All right, some fun answers from the players there, Murph. I love that Tuukka Rask went to Wimbledon over the summer. That's a pretty big-time move from the Bruins goaltender. A big-time agent, a guy we've known for a long time, a local guy. Represents Keith Yandel, represents Michael Grabner, represents one of my all-time favorites, Mike Motto, when he played at BC and in the pros. Jerry Buckley, who's based out of Rhode Island now, we sat down with him, and I know he's a good buddy of yours as well.
Yep, St. Sebastian's guy and a local guy, like you said, and you know, a guy that's actually helped me a lot during over the years in this business. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
And he's got a bunch of first-class science clients, which I think says a lot about him as an agent and individual. Here's that interview with Jerry Buckley. Joe Haggerty here with Jimmy Murphy, and we have on the line Jerry Buckley, hockey agent extraordinaire based out of Rhode Island, represents NHL names that you're very familiar with, guys like Michael Grabner, Keith Yandel, up-and-coming goaltender Dustin Tokarski. So, Jerry, just first of all, we start with all of our clients, or all of our clients, all of our people that we interview, with just how you got started in hockey, where you grew up, and sort of where your origins are. So where did you grow up, and how did you first get into the game of hockey?
So I grew up in the Boston area in Needham and started playing my hockey there.
Oh, that's a hockey hotbed in Needham.
That's it. So we played the old the rink that was at St. Sebastian's has now been renovated, so I played EMU hockey growing up there, and then went to St. Sebastian's, and then went off from there.
A fellow Arrow. That's my alma mater as well.
Did you
ran into Murph in detention. That's where we got to know each other.
Do you have a lot of connections to the NHL world, you know, going St. Sebastian's and sort of going through the system there? And like, how did you get involved in the agent game and in the NHL, and where did that all come about?
So I went, well, I was at St. Sebastian's. I obviously played there. I was drafted by the Bruins, and then went on to play at Boston College. And so I was involved in hockey, obviously. There, played a year professionally after finishing up at BC, and then was injured my rookie year and ran into, you know, health issue with my kidneys, and that ended the playing career. Went to law school, and then hooked up with another agent attorney at that time, and started working at Pro Assets Management, which was based out of Boston. And that's how I got into business.
Is that, I mean, did you, had you always, obviously, even if the playing career didn't get you, you know, to where you thought it was going to, you always wanted to be around the game of hockey. You always wanted to be around the NHL, and sort of when you got that taste, when you got drafted and, you know, played at BC and played professionally, that it's something, a world and an environment that you wanted to stay in?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's growing up, it's all I knew all the way through, you know, when I finished playing. I actually, when I was in law school, I wasn't planning on going to the agent business or the hockey business, but an opportunity came up where a guy I went to Boston College with, his uncle, with an agent, was looking for someone to kind of come in and work with them and do some recruiting and identifying talent. So I hooked up with him while I was in law school, but I didn't have intentions of fully getting into it for a career. I kind of was just doing it while I was in law school. But then I got into it, really enjoyed it, and then just have stayed in it ever since.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, the origins that you're talking about, because that does, I mean, that's something that I think most people commonly don't know, that there are agents and then there are people they work with within the agency that are actually almost like scouts and our scouts that are going out and sort of watching games and watching players and you know, figuring out who's going to be needing representation and, you know, which sort of clients you kind of want to go after. I mean, it's something that you don't hear much about, but there's definitely that world out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way a lot of us get into the business, is by, you know, either starting, you know, lower on the totem pole at an agency or within an organization, an NHL organization, just being, you know, almost volunteering your time to help in scouting and things like that. It's obviously, the sports business is a competitive business where a lot of people are looking to crack into it. So it's any opportunity you get, you kind of have to jump on it, take advantage of it, and do the grunt work for a while and then kind of build up a reputation and then go from there.
Jerry, what early on when you were going through the process of sort of climbing the ranks there, what was one of the biggest lessons you learned about how to be a successful agent?
I mean, I think the biggest lesson really is, and you guys know it because you're in the hockey business, it's a real small world. Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of one person removed from anyone you need to get to if you don't know them directly, and that's not only here in North America but over in Europe. And so I think you just have to treat people well. You've got to conduct yourself in the right way and treat people the right way. And if you do that, the biggest thing to help you is you grow in your business.
Any funny stories, you know, when you were sort of working your way up as far as just, you know, an interaction with a player or a far-off place that you found yourself, whether it was in some, you know, godforsaken frozen rink in Minnesota in the middle of winter or somewhere in Europe where you were kind of a fish out of out of water? Any kind of stories like that when you were first growing up that you tell people about what it was like kind of cutting your teeth as an agent and sort of working your way up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ones from a bunch of different spots, but I'll shoot at one that's kind of laugh at myself with it. I was my college roommate from Boston College was working down in Manhattan, and I went to go see a game at MSG. And funny, I'd been in the business for about 10 years, and I think Phoenix came in, and Keith Yandel was in town. And so we went to I went to dinner with a couple of my roommates, went to the game. And then, you know, they were busting my chops like all college roommates do that – you know, I didn't look the exact same physique-wise as I did when I was playing at BC. And
who does these
yeah,
days,
exactly.
though, right?
So I was like, I'm doing all right. I'm like, you know, I still once in a while, you know, I'll get confused for a player. It hasn't happened in a long time, like, but you know, it's you know, hopefully not. You know, you never know. So then we were walking out of MSG, and I had a fan come run over to look for an autograph for me.
Oh,
yeah,
perfect.
So I was like, oh, geez, you know what? No, I'm like, and I'm laughing because I'm like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. And then they're like, oh, I thought you were Stephen Matteau. And and then my buddy just started roaring, like, yeah, it's not like you're getting confused for a current player anymore, buddy.
That's great. Jerry, if you can remember, I mean, obviously you remember probably, who was the first player you signed to your agency?
So Mike Motto was one of my first clients that recruited Hobie Baker went around to Boston College and then played in the NHL for a long time. And so Mike was one that I was still in college or still in law school the spring he signed. I was just wrapping up law school. So yeah, he was one of my first guys.
One of the nicest guys that you'll meet in addition to being a fantastic college hockey player. It's great to see him, you know, find a place in the Chicago organization as a scout there to continue sort of watching hockey. And I did a story about him not too long ago because I think he's the right kind of guy, you know, to be talking to young players and the kind of example you want and the guidance you want from a guy like that towards the young players he's scouting.
Yeah, he's a great person. He's a good friend of mine. I mean, obviously, he's a client, and I worked for him for a long time. But he's like a close friend of mine. We actually played golf on Monday, and he's getting into the financial advisory business and starting to build that. And he's doing a great job. He's just a great person, likes helping people, and he's a good friend. So it's those are the kind of relationships, like business-wise, that you know, I really try to build on. A really quality person. Help them, and not only is a business relationship, but a personal relationship. Our kids play hockey against each other, so I see them all the time. And Courtney, his wife, is with us a lot. So that's kind of the way I do my business. Is I'm a smaller shop than some of the big agencies, but we'll try to have a personal relationship with our clients.
I mean, and that's the key, right? I know, Murph, for you and for myself, like, you know, getting stories from players, it's all about building trust and building relationships. And pretty much, as you said, with it being such a small sort of insular family, the hockey world in general, that it's always about building relationships with people. And that's, you know, not only are you helping somebody, but it's also helping you do your job in the end. You know, you get benefit out of it as well as benefiting other people.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, you've got to build the relationship and the trust with the person and that they know hey, you're here 100%. You have their back, and you're looking out for them, whether it's in contract negotiations, whether it's being honest with them in an evaluation on their play and where they fit in, and it's off ice. And the agents, we're really kind of, these guys grow up almost like a hockey big brother, a big brother to them that, you know, you help them with the on-ice stuff, you help them with the off-ice stuff, you know, all sorts of different things. I mean, they kind of lean on us for, but really it's not like when people think about the agent business, then they're looking more at contracts and numbers and holdouts and negotiations and things like that, but there's a whole lot more that goes
the kind of stuff that we bug you
but I mean, that's the part that I think the public likes to see, and you know, it's a fun part of it, but there's an awful lot more that goes into a good agent or attorney player relationship.
Buck, how much has being an agent changed in terms of how you deal with contracts and negotiations and all that since, you know, A, the salary cap came in, and I guess B, since this heavy focus developed on analytics?
Well, I mean, I've been in the business for a long time, and the change has been fast and furious. I mean, when I started, probably when I took on Mike as a client, I was dealing with like AOL dial-up internet with like no video feeds. Like you didn't even get box scores if it didn't come in the Boston Globe. Like you wouldn't know if guys were healthy scratches or if they're in the lineup unless they got a penalty or scored. So like the way we got information there was just the old-fashioned way. There'd be a scout who was at a game who you'd call him like, hey, how do you play tonight? What do you look like? You know what I mean? And you were dealing in those kind of, now we've got video feed. I can watch every shift from every one of my clients' games. And that's what I typically do. So, it's been crazy change in that regard.
How do you find that, or how much do you, and your agency use the analytics and, you know, negotiations and salary arbitration, stuff like that? Like how much do you find that actually gets thrown around and used, a lot of those sort of newfangled fancy stats, as we like to call them?
I mean, I use them for all my clients' negotiations, and I evaluate the positives and the negatives with them. And I evaluate how it is against their teammates and against people around the league, so I'm prepared, and kind of get a better understanding of that. That being said, it has not trickled in as much into negotiations as I think the media thinks it may, or, you know, as much as it's talked about media-wise, it's definitely not as much in the individual negotiations, in my personal, negotiations.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Buck, if you go, I can't stand this stuff, by the way, guys. So,
well,
I'm
like most people.
In between.
I just think it's a balance, right? I mean, it's something certainly teams have to look at because they feel like they have to leave no stone unturned when they're evaluating players or trying to find a diamond in a rough or a guy that's, you know, underrated or undervalued in the market. But I think you're right on, Buck, when you say that, like, the media attention towards it and certain people that have an agenda that want to catapult it forward bandy about its importance have kind of skewed it so it's not the way it should have been balance-wise, where I think it's always going to be a combination of these crazy fancy stats and also just what you see on the ice and what you know about what's going on with a player off the ice, because all of that stuff factors in, right?
Right. Well, it's good. It's good to see, like Buck saying, that the teams aren't going gaga over it like the media is. You know, I mean, that's good to know, because I think sometimes you're right with the media. There's way too much emphasis on it, and you forget about the intangibles and the little things that make a guy good that you can't really measure with analytics. But Buck, I want to go back just to cap situations there, and you know, obviously, over the last 10 years or 11 years since we put in the cap, we've seen times where we thought there was going to be a lot of money spent, say, in free agency, and there wasn't. We've seen times where we thought there wouldn't be, and there was. How have you sort of monitored that balance as you go in each, you know, towards the end of a season and you're going into the off season, you're preparing for that? How do you sort of gauge where it's going to be? Because, I mean, I thought this past off season, GMs finally showed the restraint they have to. Which wasn't probably good for a guy like you, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's constantly changing. You're constantly evaluating the marketplace. I mean, and we're looking at things that we never looked at, like the exchange rate between the Canadian and U.S. dollars. Like, that is a major influence on the salary cap numbers increasing, lowering, things like that with hockey-related revenue. Like, so those are things that 11 years ago I never looked at. But now we're forecasting that, and You know, so I'd try to get a lot of information, particularly early on, and people would say, hey, Buck, if we knew which way the exchange rate was going to go, would invest like $100 million and retire. You know what I mean? Like, no one can really anticipate with certainty what's going to happen. It's just the free markets that are out there that are kind of moving things around. So I don't bank on any of it, but I do monitor it and hockey revenues to see projections on where the cap might be going and then how that'll affect, well, you know, Team X looks like they're, because of their contracts already on their books, if the cap stays where it is, are going to be in the back, you know, not going to have a lot of money. So you can kind of, if you've got a marquee free agent going into it, you know, that might not be a key spot, but you can't just knock out a team because of that, because you don't know what their internal plans are in terms of buyouts, mm-hmm. moving players and trades that they have, someone that will take the contract off their books. So you do the best you can evaluating everything, but you don't always have all the information, or you basically never have all the information. So you just try to do the best research you can, but then keep on making the phone calls and presenting your players. Even if from the outside it looks like it wouldn't be a fit financially, just because you don't know what they have going inside that could change it that you're not aware of at this point.
Just in a general sense, looking at this CBA, I mean, is there some concern? I've felt it just looking at it from the outside and seeing the direction that the CBA is going, where, you know, the term limits on contracts, the, you know, the curbing the variance from year to year, like how different the salaries can be and some of the different things that got changed this time around. You see almost a sort of trend where it's almost becoming more like the NBA, where there's going to be, you know, a group of superstar players on each team, or really top tier players on each team that are making a lot of money. And then there's going to be a lot of players making close to the minimum. And like that middle class is going to start to get worn away. And it's, you know, I feel like
much like society.
Well, I feel like we're starting to see that a little bit, right? Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of veterans that, you know, would be making that middle class sort of money now don't have contracts, don't have jobs, or in tryouts and camps. And, you know, it seems like it's always been that way, but maybe it's even more so now, where there's this focus on the young, affordable players and the veterans are sort of getting pushed out earlier than they might have in the past.
You're right that is a concern. But I can tell you it's been a concern in the business through the Players Association for as long as I've been in the business. It's been a real concern that, hey, the stars are going to get paid. We all know that. That's what drives the business. And there was a worry that the middle class would get squeezed. And that fear, like, hasn't really played out. Now, this year, I agree with you. You could see that middle class got squeezed a little bit, and there's some guys that got squeezed out. But if you look at the middle class across the league, like just say your average, like top four defenseman, number four, they're still getting paid a very high rate. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's dropped down. You know, if you're a top four defenseman, you're making over $3 million, which is a pretty good pay when you consider their production compared to a number one or a number two.
Absolutely.
If that continues, though, right, and we come up, you know, let's say look ahead a year right now, and there's even more free agents, you know, in the final week of camp looking for work. You know, I've been reading a lot of stuff right now, obviously because of what the dollar's like over in Russia, that a lot of players are going to start coming back from the KHL, trying to get back into the NHL. What do you think it's going to be like then, Buck, when, you know, you add those players to the mix that are looking for work? Are we going to see just, you know, a plethora of players that don't have a job as the season begins?
Well, I do think the KHL is not nearly as strong as it was a few years ago. And obviously, economic sanctions on Russia for all the political things going on, it has affected that. And you are seeing players come back. But I guess, again, like, you're not losing. The NHL is not, what we're talking about here in the NHL, and obviously it affects the guys on an individual level, but we're talking about the lowest percentage of the, I mean, 98% mm-hmm. of the guys that are NHL bona fide players, they're difference makers. They're all signing in camp. You know, we're talking about the guys who have either come off injuries, a little bit older, and there's always an attrition of older players that are aging out of the league and replaced by younger guys coming up. It does seem like this year it's a little bit more drastic than it has been in years past.
What you mentioned earlier that, you know, your agency is more of a smaller shop rather than this big, huge agency. What's the biggest challenge as far as, you know, running an agency that's not the biggest out there when some of the competitors obviously have all kinds of, you know, manpower and money and staff that they can throw at, you know, attracting clients and stuff like that?
I don't look at it as a negative as much as it's just like it's just a whole different business model, you know, and what I'm trying to do here. Like, I'm not trying to have the biggest agency here. What I'm trying to do is have the best service and relationship with my clients. So, you know, so it's not something where, hey, my goal is to scale this into the biggest business in the industry. If I was, then there'd be issues that you run into as a smaller shop. But, you know, for me, I think it's an asset for me and for my clients, just because it's not like a bigger firm where you have, hey, one guy's recruiting you, another guy's helping you when you're in college, another guy's, you know, working with you in the American League, you get the NHL, and then you get the big name person working with you. Like, Where I am is, hey, I'm the guy that recruited you is the guy who's going to be with you all the way through, helping you through the whole thing. And then, you know, so there's a comfort and there's a trust relationship, a relationship built instead of, hey, we just moved on to the next level. Congratulations. Here's John. John handles this part of it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. It makes sense though, right? And I would imagine from your end, it's more beneficial too, where, you know, you're closer to your clients and, you know, you have this relationship with them where you sort of see the journey from beginning to end rather than having these people that you represent that you, you know, barely interact with. I would imagine that, you know, makes your job a lot easier on levels too.
It helps tremendously in that I know the person. I know what's important to them. I know their strengths. I know their weaknesses. I know that, hey, this guy's psyche is, he wants to drive to free agency and that's no problem for him. Like, and I know other clients who, hey, that's going to worry them, it concerns them, it might affect their play. You know, and I know which guy maybe would perform better in a big market or a guy who might be better in a smaller market. And those are things that athletes want to share openly with anyone. You know, I mean, it's kind of like you just have to get to know them as a person and feel like, okay, where is this guy going to be able to perform his best, be comfortable with the best situation for him financially, location-wise, coaching style, like all that stuff. And if you really have a good relationship and you really know your client over years, it helps you place them in a good spot to be successful.
You know what this got me thinking of, guys, and I'm going to ask you, Buck, and I don't expect you at all to comment on any specific situations that are currently ongoing in the NHL or have happened in the last summer, but, you know, obviously it's kind of been a tough off season for the NHL in terms of PR and some trouble that the players have gotten into. But as I'm listening to you talk about, you know, the benefits of having a smaller agency and knowing your players well, it made me think of this, and it made me think, you know, one of the questions that came to mind when some of these cases that have gone on made it into the news, you know, one of the things that always comes to mind, I'm saying, well, where's the agent on this? And why didn't the agent sort of get a feel for this earlier on and see maybe some kind of patent developing that led to this incident? And I guess my question to you is, considering the relationships you have, how much easier has it been to, so if anything ever seems to be going in the wrong direction, to sense it and address it with your clients?
Well, it's that's a huge part of it, and that's where, you know, I really, when you have a smaller shop, you can have a more personal relationship, and you can kind of get a sense, like, geez, that's kind of how he just acted or what he just said, like, that's kind of been out of character, like, I wonder what's going on. And at that point, you know, I'll have relationships with their wife, mother, their father, because I've probably known them since they were teenagers. And so if I see something that's a red flag, I can contact someone that was with them day to day and say, hey, everything all right? Like, you know, just wondering, kind of some couple things happened that were kind of caught me off guard that was not normal, and I just wanted to check in with it. And that's, you know, that's what I do. And I've had some clients where I've had to, I've done that, followed up, and something did concern me. I flew out, met with them, sat down, addressed it with them, and said, hey, tell me if I'm right, tell me if I'm reading this wrong, or if you need help, can we do this and that, and, you know, drive it, and we'll address it, and here, there are resources here for you that are confidential that we can help you with. And I've done that with clients, and, you know, I mean, it's what they go through is tough. I mean, it's, people think that professional life is it's all great, but there are negatives with it. You're away from family, you have ups and downs, you know, you've got injuries or concussions or different things. It's it's just the professional athlete population is similar to the regular population, that they have different guys that have different strength and weakness. Some have issues that pop up, some don't. Like, you know, they don't want to share it with people publicly. They want to keep it private, so they need a network of people they trust that they can pick up the phone and say, I can call Buck and I can talk to him about this because he's going to stay with him and he's going to take care of me. He's going to point me in the right direction because he always has, you know. And that's the value of having a long-term relationship with these guys.
What did you think of what the LA Kings did in bringing in Brent Mears and having that sort of middle guy there? And according to everything we've read, it's going to be confidential between him and the players, what they come to him and divulge. What do you think of a team taking that step to kind of prevent this and get ahead of the curve?
Anything you do to help, anything you try to do, like, I'm all for that, like, you know, and see how it goes. Like, it'll be interesting to see. I think there's always that employee of the team, you know, it's going to be a hurdle for the guys to get over and really open up, no matter how it's set up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. That's why I think the, like you had mentioned earlier, the agents have to be, like, that's, so the Players Association looks out for the whole group. The team looks out for themselves. Like, the players' representative to look out for them personally is their agent. And you would think that the Players Association and the player are always aligned. And most of the times they are, but not all the time. So
no.
They represent the group of 600, whereas I represent, you know, the individual person that's going through the situation. And like I said, most of the time they're on the same page, but occasionally they're not. So that's where the agent really needs to step in. Now,
from the agent's perspective, the situation with Jack Johnson, the financial situation, do you understand how something like that could happen? Is that something where you say, oh, I could see that go in that direction if it really went bad, or did that kind of blow you away if you saw any of the details about that?
Well, I've seen some of the details, but I certainly don't know it in depth, so I couldn't really talk about exactly how it happened with him or what happened, but I think what you need to do with the athletes is you need to have, you know, a system set up in place and how things are going to be happening, you know, how they happen, who's got authorization for what, and be very, very cautious authorizing people to do things on the guy's behalf. You know, and I think that's where that situation looked like it went off the tracks when other people were being authorized to make payments and finances. So with our guys, we set up checks and balances, so there's multiple things that need to be done before any of that stuff happens. And I'm very, very conservative and structured with that. You know, I haven't had any clients have that and go through that, thank goodness, and that's like the number one thing for me. Hey, these guys work so hard to get to the point where they put themselves and their family in a good financial position. We need to make sure we safeguard that, because their earnings that they're making now in their 20s and early 30s are going to have to last their whole lifetime. So they can't have a mistake. You know, someone who's 25 and they're working, they make a mistake financially when they're 20. Well, they've got a long time to make up for it. When these guys make a mistake in their 20s, like, these are their earnings. These are their massive earning years. Like, really affect them long term.
No doubt, no doubt. And that's obviously why, you know, the agent is there to advise them and point them in the right direction, have those, you know, services or advice where it's needed. Just moving on to some of your clients, how excited are you to see a guy like Grabner in Toronto and to see what he can do there in that big spotlight with that team? It should be an enjoyable experience for him being in the hockey hub up there.
Oh, he's really excited, and it's a great move for him. It's going to give him an opportunity to really kind of get back and get his game back going. And he's fully healthy. He's been kind of battling some injuries over the last couple of years, but he feels great. It's an exciting time up there in Toronto. There's obviously been changes everywhere. And, you know, they're looking at building the right culture and getting the thing back on track and going in the right direction. And they brought in some great people to do it. So, you know, I think that organization's heading in the right direction.
And what's sort of the plan with Keith in New York? Is he, you know, just going to play out this year and see how it goes? Do you think he has a desire to stay with the Rangers at this point? He liked sort of the taste of, you know, the playoffs and what happened there towards the end of last year. And being an East Coast guy, I'm sure being in New York is something that's a good fit for him. Sort of where's his mind at this point?
Yeah, Keith Yandel is, you know, he's obviously at the trade. He was in Arizona for his whole career, and their trade kind of rumors and speculation kind of seemed like he was the poster boy for that over the last bunch of years because of
Yandel to Boston every year.
Yandel to the Bruins every single season.
So he kind of became immune to that. Just because it was just kind of a joke. I'd get a text like at that time of year again, it's the draft, it's the trade deadline, and yep. You know, you had the movers on speed dial, but it never really happened. But the time where obviously we did last spring, we kind of knew it was coming, and it was a real possibility that it was going to happen. And there was legitimate talk that I knew, and I didn't want to see, but hey, it looked like it could happen this time. He really enjoyed his time in New York in the spring, the playoff run. I think Arizona has been a real tough environment to play in the last few years just because of the instability with ownership, the rank, lease agreement there. You know, guys coming and going because they're working on such a financial, tight budget out there. For Keith to come to New York and join a team, you know, Stanley Cup caliber team, you know, he really enjoyed it. I mean, he really enjoys the players down there, the atmosphere, the organization, and the, I think the ability to, hey, go out every night and expect to win, you know, is something he really enjoys. That being said, he really hasn't, he's really good at just focusing on what he's going to do today. He really hasn't looked too far ahead. Obviously, it is the last year of his contract, and he has a chance to become a free agent this summer, but he's taking the approach that he's just going to go day by day, and we'll just see how things play out.
Yeah, sounded like a good agent there, Jerry. Nice work. What was it like for you? I don't know if pride is the right word, but what was it like for you to watch Keith put on that Richard jersey during the pregame skate and, you know, sort of make a step towards raising some money for the Richard family? Obviously, the loss of Martin Richard, the little boy, in the marathon bombings. And then, you know, to hear from the family. And I work with an extended member of the family, so I knew they really wanted that jersey, even though it was going to get raffled off, they really wanted it for themselves to be able to put it in the house. And I saw an article in the Globe, I think it was over the summertime or right around the anniversary of the bombings, where that Richard jersey that Keith wore still hangs in their living room. I mean, what's it like for you to watch a client sort of, you know, make that connection and make that move and really impact a family in a positive way in a difficult time like that?
Well, Keith is, I've worked with Keith since he's been 16 years old. And, the man he is now was a lot different than when he was 16. And not that there were issues or any problems, but watching him grow up, and he just gets it. He's just one of those guys who understands the impact that he can have and what people, you know, can appreciate when he comes and he goes out of his way to help people. He really does. And he does it behind the scenes. He's not a guy who looks to get immediate attention with things. Like, he just likes to help people. And he goes out of his way, and particularly with children, with people in the Boston area or in Arizona, or in there. fireman. That's near and dear to his heart because of his family. So he's also been involved with the fight against cancer and breast cancer. He does a lot of things behind the scene that people never really know about. That one was obviously one that got a lot of the media attention and went public. And Keith, through the marathon bombing, like being away from home and being away from family, like, it was hard for him. And a lot of my clients were like that. They saw the Boston guys, they saw what was going on and felt like, hey, like, I should be back. Like, people are hurting at home. Is everyone all right? Like, and I know it really affected him and going on and playing that night. I think he just was looking for a way to show the Martin family and people in Boston that he was in the bomb and he was wishing he was there to try to do something to help out. And it's just, I don't know how well you guys have gotten to know him. He's kind of quiet, media-wise, but he's just a really solid person, caring person, and just tries to help people when he can. And he's a leader in that regard in his locker room. And that, whenever a guy got traded down to Arizona, if I have a young guy who's playing with or against him, like, he'll be like, all right, great. And, in warm-ups or something, he'll say something during the game to just, either welcome the guy or give him a hard time or joke with him. He's a real solid person.
Yeah, no doubt. I got to know him a little bit during that lockout half season when he was skating at BU with a lot of the Bruins guys. Everybody knows the Yandel family if you've been around hockey in Boston, and that they're good hockey people. And Keith is no different in that regard. It's a real pleasure talking to you, Jerry, a local agent, a guy that represents a lot of familiar names both locally and in the NHL, and a guy that we get to see on a regular basis up here at the Garden on the ninth floor to share a few laughs. We really appreciated the time.
No problem. I appreciate you guys having me on. You guys do a great job. I follow you guys and watch your programming, read your articles and all that. So keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. We'll keep bugging you for information, Buck. Thank you very much.
Have a great day, guys.
All right, you too. Take care. All right, Murph. That was a fun interview with Jerry Buckley. A lot of interesting topics broached, whether it was the Jack Johnson stuff, whether it was the CBA. He's such a straight shooter. I love that guy.
Yeah, I like it too when we asked him about, some of the things that have gone on off the ice in the NHL this year, whether it be, we didn't reference it, but he knew what we were talking about, whether it be Patrick Kane or some of the things that happened with the Kings, and the role the agent needs to play. He didn't call out agents there, but he said, look, that's one thing he appreciated about his business being a little smaller than some of the other ones, because he knows his clients so well. And it's that much easier to know the direction they're headed in.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that it's a personal business for him.
Yeah.
And he's a personal relationship, a close one.
And being that he's Jerry, it's Jerry Maguire. That's what he reminds me of right there.
Just I could picture Keith Yandel on the phone yelling, show me the money, Buck! Show me the
Jerry!
Money! He's going to be a free agent next year. All right, that's it for this episode of the Great American Hockey Show. As always,
good stuff.
Keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey. If you want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.